Shortwave America, your international source for quality shortwave, amateur radio, and diverse radio-related content.
Please say hello to an American legend, Mr. Dick Clark.
Dick Clark passed away Wednesday morning, April 18, 2012, from a massive heart attack after entering the hospital in California for a minor outpatient procedure. This show will pay tribute to the entertainment industry's most recognizable face and voice.
This is Your Life, an American television tradition. And now here he is, Mr. This Is Your Life himself, Ralph Edwards.
Our teenagers today are molded by many influences, some profound, some lighthearted, each important in its way. And one of those lighthearted influences is popular music. Right now, the curtain in our This Is Your Life studio is going up on an exciting group of people. Without their seeing us for a moment, let's take a look at them through a camera. Now, there they are.
Favorite popular young singers, Frankie Avalon, Andy Williams, Fabian, and Connie Francis. And there's famous television disc jockey Dick Clark, and educator Dr. F. Willard Robinson of the Los Angeles City Schools. One of them is about to be our guest of honor on This Is Your Life, but he doesn't know it yet. He thinks he's about to take part in a panel discussion of teenage music. Let's go in and surprise him.
Excuse me, my name's Ralph Edwards, and hi, y'all. I've met all you other panel members, but until this moment, I haven't had the pleasure of meeting you and saying to you, Dick Clark. Hi, Dick. Musical star maker, America's number one disc jockey, host. Oh, my, he's become a spokesman for the great wholesome majority of American teenagers tonight. Dick, this is your life.
Yeah, but he didn't explain this one,
no,
did he?
It's no, very vague.
Dick Clark, this is your life, the life of one of today's outstanding television personalities. As master of ceremonies of two nationally televised record and dance shows, American Dance Band on weekdays from Philadelphia, and the Dick Clark Show on Saturday nights from New York City, you have a combined weekly audience of, let's say, 50 million Americans at least, and you receive 50,000 letters a week from your teenage fans, which you answer through your Sunday column in This Week magazine. Circulation almost 12 million.
Frankie Avalon!
Mr. Edwards, I'll always be grateful to Dick for the faith he had in me. And when things weren't going so well, Dick played a record of mine, Dee Dee Dinah. And that was on a Thursday, and on a Monday, I was on my way. So, and also, Dick isn't just a maker of hit records. He's a real good friend and a counselor for teenagers. And he also directed Fabian and me into a career in motion pictures.
You're supposed to be making that motion picture right now. What are you doing here?
Yes, Guns of the Timberland at Warner Brothers right now. Thanks a million, Frankie Avalon. You'll see Dick a little later. America's youngest star maker, Dick Clark. You're born in Mount Vernon, New York on November 30th, 1929, and christened Richard Wagstaff Clark. How you grew up to become, at the age of 29, Dick Clark, who's liked and respected by millions of teenagers, I'm sure your mother and father can tell us. And here they are from their home in Utica, New York, Richard A. and Julia Clark. Here's Mom and Dad. Let Mom get on that side of you, Dick. What sort of interest did Dick have as a boy, Ms. Clark?
Oh, Dick always loved music, and he loved being outside. He and the neighborhood children spent hours building tree huts and digging tunnels out in the woods and back of where we lived.
You helped us build one of them once. We got the car out one time and tied a long rope to it to hoist the roof up to a two-story hut we built.
That's the kind of mother to have, isn't it?
Not too many of these around these.
Yeah, and later at Mount Vernon's A.B. Davis High School, Dick, although you're too light for football, not quite fast enough for the track or swimming team, you try out for these sports, and one spring...
I was an All-American failure when I came to athletics.
You win a certain athletic competition, though. What was that? The push-up contest.
Oh, this was the one thing I could do. A friend of mine and I spent many, many hours practicing push-ups and sit-ups. I don't think I do more than five now, but at the time I would...
You still hold the record, I think, there at A.B. Davis. Mr. Clark, was Dick's youth always a happy one?
Oh, for the most part, Ralph. Of course, there were some sad times. He had an older brother, Brad. He loved and admired him very dearly. Brad was quite an athlete. Football and a speed swimmer, and Dick, of course, tried to follow in his footsteps. But after Brad's death in World War II, Dick was a high school freshman then. It did something to him. He was pretty depressed for a long time, but he got over it and decided that he'd have to stand on his own two feet. And later, he became president of his high school student council.
Thank you both very much. Mr. and Mrs. Clark, we're flying out here from Utica, New York, to help us honor your splendid son. Here's Fabian.
Never thought you'd lie to me.
How you doing, Dick?
I just want to
ask.
He rode all the way here with me.
I just wanted to ask if you needed a babysitter.
What's this babysitting business?
Well, one day the Clarks were stuck for a babysitter, so I volunteered.
He's spoiled, you know, between this fellow here and his grandparents. This child of mine has never been the same. He won't settle for an ordinary babysitter now.
How'd you do with the...
Well, I tried to give little Dickie a bubble bath, but I got old bubbles.
This was a sight to see.
I must have been something full of soap. Fabian, your record, Tiger, sold 180,000 copies within the first week after Dick started it off on American Bandstand. He's a hit maker for sure, eh, Fabian?
Well, Ralph, he's a real wonderful guy, and Dick, I can't tell you how grateful I am for... my record sales and my movie contract, just thanks to me and Dick.
His high school boy, soon-to-be movie star in the 20th Century Fox Jerry Wall production, Hound Dog Man. Thank you, Fabian.
Thanks, Fabian. There is one very important point that should be made for Frankie and Fabe. I am only one player of records. There are countless thousands of fellas around who do what I do. And I'm sure they give their thanks to them, too. I just happen to know them because they live in my neighborhood and that sort of thing.
They do that, all right. But you weren't at the meeting yesterday when Fabian and Frankie started talking about you. And if we ever let them get up here and talk what they really think about you and how much they appreciate what you've done, just not only as a player of records, but as a counselor, as you've said, and all that, it would take 2 days. And as a grade school boy, Dick, your sense of fun has a bit of happy mischief mixed in it. And one night, while visiting your grandparents in Rome, New York, you're visited by the police. Now, what for?
Yeah, this is... I had a little brush with the authorities. I was... That was the only night I ever got pinched.
How old were you, bud?
Oh, I don't know, about 8 or 9 years old. My cousin and I were making weird noises on the porch.
Yeah.
And it was a great gag to see everybody run down the street after we did this. And we did it to the same person twice, and they finally came and picked us up and scared the daylights out of us. They let us go.
Altogether, though, Dick, your school days are pretty carefree.
They were that, Ralph. Dick? Do you remember the Green Hornet?
The voice of your pal since childhood. Today, an attorney for the Securities and Exchange Commission of New York City, here from his home in Mount Vernon, New York, is Andy Grass.
Oh, Andy.
How are you?
What was this Green Hornet, Andy?
Well, that was a 15-year-old sedan, Ralph, that Dick and I used to have drive around town and pick up records for his record collection.
He owned the front half and I owned the back half.
Well, he was always looking around for records, wasn't he?
All the time. I think even then he was able to pick a hit record before anybody else.
Well, now, Andy, I expect that car, the Green Hornet, came in handy for double dates, too, didn't it?
Oh, very much so. I remember one in particular, Halloween of 1945, in our junior year. I Had a pretty new girl in school with me for my date. It was a girl that Dick had known, hadn't known, but had wanted to meet.
Well, what
this
was
is a true friend, you know?
Yes. What was that new girl's name, Dick?
Her name was Barbara.
Yeah. And she turned out to be
my wife.
Yes. You left her at home in Philadelphia day before yesterday. You think, but here she is now, your lovely wife, Barbara Mallory Clark. Here's Bobby.
Hi. Hi, Mom. Thank you. You were talking about a double date, Andy?
Yeah, what about...
Well, you were my date that night, but soon after you became Dick's girl for good.
Right. Thank you, Andy Grass, for flying out from Mount Vernon, New York, to tell us how these two fine kids met.
This sneaky devil. I stole his girl and he stole mine because the girl I had been going with, he married eventually.
Is that how that worked out? We'll do Andy's life next week and get Dick on it. Sit down, gang. David Sewell.
How are you, buddy?
Creator of the Chipmunk Song, which has already sold 4 million copies.
That's right, Ralph. And I must say that my old buddy here, Dick, had an awful lot to do with the way that song became a success, for which I'm very grateful. Dick, but I want to ask you something. The Chipmunks are growing up, and they're, you know, they'll be teenagers after a while, and they're going to get involved in marriage, I think. And did you and Barbara have any problem while you were in high school about getting married rather than going on to college?
I don't know. We'd fought this out, I guess, as everybody does, but not too seriously.
You both thought probably better to go through college first, is that it?
Well, I think not only we agreed, but our parents agreed, too. So that made it kind of easy. Everybody was in agreement.
David Sewell, thank you for being here with us and seeing your old pal, Nick and Bobby. Dick, although you and Bobby here date other people from time to time in high school and college, neither of you is ever serious about anyone else after your meeting. In a moment, we'll learn how a Mount Vernon, New York teenager goes on to become, in 12 short years, the favorite you are today of teenagers all over America. This is your life, Dick Clark. After both you and Dick graduate from high school, Bobby, where did each of you go to college?
Well, Dick went up to Syracuse University in New York, and I went to State Teachers College in Salisbury, Maryland. And when he went to Syracuse, Dick decided to prepare for his career in radio and in television by taking a business administration course and majoring in advertising and by working at WOLF in Syracuse.
But it isn't all work in your college days, Dick. You take a leading part in campus activities. And also, you do some driving from Syracuse, New York to Salisbury, Maryland for a good reason. We understand some of those winter trips down to see Bobby were pretty cold. How'd you keep warm on the way?
Oh, I had at the time a 1934 Ford convertible that didn't have a heater in it. And this was in the middle of the winter, and it's not a bad drive down there, except this took 17 hours once. I had an old horse blanket in the thing, a hand warmer that you lighted, you know, and I put that in my pocket and wore my galoshes.
Youth
is wonderful, you know. You could never do this again.
And by the time you graduate from Syracuse University in 1951, Dick, your father's become manager of radio station WRUN in Utica, but not wishing to trade on his name, you get a job as newscaster on Utica station WKTV, using the name Dick Clay. Clay. Yeah. You work there for about a year, gaining valuable experience, and remarkably for a newscaster, a personal following of high school students. Spring 1952, your father agrees with you that the next step in your radio television career ought to be into a larger market area, and he sets up an interview for you with the manager of station WFIL-TV in Philadelphia. And here from his home in that city, where today he's vice president of Triangle Publications Radio and Television Division, is that former manager, Roger Cliff.
Lord. I just saw you a few days ago.
All his past coming back. Roger, will you tell us your impression of Dick when he came to see you that day in 1952?
Well, the minute he walked in, Ralph, I thought to myself, we certainly can use this young man. Mm-hmm. He was well-dressed, clean-cut, polite, a guy knowing where he was going. He gave me the feeling that you could count on him to do a job right. And when he asked me whether there's a radio or television job in the area, I said to him, what about our station?
You arranged for him to be auditioned that same day. And now, here from Philadelphia, where today's program and production manager, WFIL-TV, and also executive producer of American Bandstand, is the man who directed Dick's audition, Lou Klein. Here's Lou.
How did Dick's audition go there, Lou?
Dick was nervous and excited and impressed when he came to WFIL, and yet he had a quiet, confident manner about him. When he walked in, he brought with him his own script for a news show, a soup commercial, and a little write-up about himself. Dick was certainly a young man who knew where he was going and how to get there.
And I was scared to death.
Everybody liked him, and of course he got the job.
Which is a lesson for all young people in search of jobs. Come prepared. Thank you, Roger Clipp and Lou Klein, for taking time out. Here from Philadelphia to give us this insight into Dick's character. Dick, you'll see Roger and Lou and all the gang later at the party in your honor at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, where your family and out-of-town friends have been staying. Andy Williams.
Andy.
Sit down there, Andy
panel.
And Dick. Yeah, what happened to the panel? They're coming in.
You know, Ralph, my record of Hawaiian Wedding Song has sold pretty close to a million now.
Two.
And I don't think that Dick's playing it hurt at all. Incidentally, I think I was one of the very first performers to appear on Dick's American Bandstand program a couple years ago. But Dick really started on WFIL in May of 1952, doing announcing and commercials. And about six weeks after he started, I think if Hawaiian Wedding Song had been popular, then it would have been very appropriate for Dick.
Yes, Dick, oh, the moment you feel secure in your new job, you get out your trusty old car and head for Bobby's home in Salisbury, Maryland, in the June wedding in 1952.
And Dick was so busy those few weeks before the wedding with his new job that I had to buy my own wedding ring.
It looks like a good buy, too. I think it's going to be on there for a long time.
Thank you, Andy Williams, for being here tonight, and good luck on your new Andy Williams show on another network this summer.
Good luck to you. These people are working constantly, and they're making movies. He's got his own show. How did you get a hold of them all?
They came for you. And the difficult thing was to keep it away from you, because you were here in the NBC studios, you see, and we had to really do some scallywagging.
They had me running around like a fool. We got what they call a
special... You should have been doing push-ups, you know. That seems in June 1956, go ahead, you were saying about the special telecast.
No, we got a special telecast that comes up on June 28th, and they've been having me work on that in a movie and so forth. And this was kind of extra added, and I couldn't figure out how we were going to get everything done in 2 days and go back to work.
In June 1956, you're assigned the job of Master of Ceremonies of WFIL's local television record show, American Bandstand, which immediately gains great popularity in the Philadelphia area. So much so that teenagers monopolize their sets at home and line up at the station hours ahead of showtime to watch and take part in the program. The amazed and delighted higher-ups noticed this, and Roger Clipp is successful in getting the network to try it nationally in August 1957. And its phenomenal success since then is television history. Dick, how did you feel when you first went on the network?
Gee, I had been on the network once before, Ralph, doing commercials on Paul Whiteman's television show.
That's right.
But I had never been on all by myself with, you know, my own program. I was scared to death.
In 1958, the network inaugurates, in addition, the equally successful Saturday night Dick Clark show, New York City. And in the midst of all this, as though there isn't enough excitement in your life, you become a father. On January 9th, 1957, Bobby presents you with Richard Augustus Clark II. Connie Francis.
Hi.
You're a sneaky devil, you.
Connie, last year you were voted number one female vocalist in both the United States and Europe. And following the great success of your record, Who's Sorry Now? And since that record, you've had seven consecutive other hits. We understand Dick Clark had something to do with all this.
I just about say he had everything to do with it.
We're
Ralph.
Good luck to one another,
we
I think.
We sure are. You know, I've been singing for about 11 years, Ralph, and New Year's Day of 1958, I'd been recording for 2.5 years, and nothing had ever happened with any of my records, and I was feeling very, very discouraged, and I went into the living room and turned on American Bandstand, and Dick Clark was playing Who's Sorry Now for the very first time, and he continued to play it for 30 days thereafter, and within 2 months, it had sold over 1 million records, all because of the push that he gave it.
Ah.
It's the truth. You know, it makes no difference to Dick who you are, but what you are. He's a beautiful man. And I think that just about everybody in the business says that we love him. Mm-hmm. Very, very much.
Thank you, Connie Francis, for flying from your home in Bloomfield, New Jersey, to be with us.
She's an amazing young lady, Ralph, because as you know, there are not too many new, young, successful female vocalists, and that's right. She's just about the hottest thing there is, Ralph.
Certainly is. And your past has been filled with music, Dick, and it's a good bet your future will be, too. Dick, here are two more important men in your life, speaking about that baby. Another Dick Clark, Richard Augustus II, in the arms of your friend from Philadelphia, the producer of American Bandstand, come in Dickie and Tony Mamarella. Tony and Tony.
I'm walking around on the floor.
Yeah. Oh, my. Ralph, you know, one thing about Dick, it's the respect and the affection that the young people have for him. You know, sometimes the crowd can get really out of hand, but they listen to Dick. And just a couple of weeks ago, when we were up in New England, Dick saw a girl who was in the crush of the crowd wanting to get his autograph and whatnot, and he stepped off the bandstand very calmly, and he just walked over, got the young lady, brought her back, and just asked all the kids. The PA system had conked out. Asked all the kids if they just wouldn't kind of hold off, and for him, they do.
You bet they do. Dick, Prell wants you to have this 16-millimeter Bell and Howell sound projector and electric eye movie camera together with a film of this program for your future enjoyment. And Prell has asked Marshall Jewelers of Fifth Avenue, New York, to design these gold cufflinks for you right here. Oh, that's a charm bracelet. That's for you. Marshall wants you to have that, Bobby. Charms depicting events in your and Dick's life. Dick, you may sit there. Just sit down, Dick, if you want, old pal. And I'm the boss on this show, you understand? I mean, I've been out those records and all that kind of stuff. Prell also, Dick, has had Marshall design this Dick Clark trophy at Barb Warren showing you with places for 23 names, which is to be awarded in your name for the next 23 years to the president of the student council of the A.B. Davis High School in Mount Vernon, New York. Your old job. And finally, Prell has commissioned the well-known artist, David Immerman, to paint this portrait of Dickie for you. There you are. Oh, there you go. Television headliner, star maker, family man, friend and champion of American teenagers, Dick Clark, this is your life. Good night. God bless you, Dick. Thank you very much.
Our out-of-town guests are flown to Hollywood via TWA's luxurious jet stream, nonstop service, coast-to-coast and overseas. Fly the finest. Fly TWA jet stream service.
Dickie, did you enjoy the program?
You did?
Did you? Good boy. Good boy. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, This Is Your Life brings you the first of 13 shows you've asked to see again. Ann Blythe, the Hollywood star who's devoting her time and energies to the betterment of her fellow man. I'm sure you'll want to see that one again, as well as your other favorites of past This Is Your Life seasons. Steve Allen, Justice William E. Powers, Ambassador Carlos Romulo, many others, all the shows you've asked for. So tell your friends about it. Don't miss a single one of them yourself. I'll see you next week then, along with Ann Blythe. Until then, good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
This Is Your Life is a Ralph Edwards production. Produced by Axel Gruenberg and directed by Richard Gottlieb.
From June 24th, 1959, that was the popular show of the day, This Is Your Life, hosted by Ralph Edwards, featuring his special guest, Dick Clark. Coming up next on the Shortwave America Memorial Tribute to Dick Clark, we will hear select clips from the 30-year anniversary celebration of American Bandstand, featuring Barry Manilow, and then we'll hear Dick Clark talk about some of his most memorable, most meaningful times from American Bandstand.
American Bandstand's 30th anniversary special starring the Beach Boys, Kim Carnes, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Connie Francis, Frankie Lane, Barry Manilow, Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield, the Righteous Brothers, the Oak Ridge Boys, Teddy Pendergrass, Rod Stewart, Stevie Wonder, and our host Dick Clark. He'll be here in a few minutes, but right now he's on the other side of Los Angeles at a Barry Manilow concert at the Forum.
Thank you very much. I wanted to tell you, first of all, I've enjoyed the show so far, but I can't stay for the rest. I gotta go.
You can't stay. Where are you going?
Across town.
Yes.
We are having a giant television special commemorating the 30th anniversary of American Bandstand. I want you to come.
You want us all to come to this thing? We can all get in the station wagon.
No.
All right. Well, the next best thing I can do for you is I have the perfect song to send you on your way.
My favorite.
Your favorite song. Go. Have a
All
good
right.
time.
Hey.
Congratulations, Dick. Have a great time. All right, boys. One, two, three, go.
The longest helicopter ride in history. You did that 2 days ago with Barry at the Los Angeles Forum. Wait till you see what we've been preparing for the last 3 days in the Bandstand studio. Forget 3 days. How about preparing for 30 years? Tonight's a celebration. Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen and friends of American Bandstand, Dick Clark.
I was hoping you'd do that, to tell you the truth. No, that's really nice. I mean, words should come to me very quickly now. They should drop out of my mouth. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. I've waited a long time for this night. It's going to be a memorable night. There's so many friends here and so many memories to share and good people, and it's a very special night. I thank you very, very much for coming to share it, because I think it's part of your life, too. Yeah, I had a little speech I put all together, and it was full of jokes and stuff like that. Listen to me pant now. I mean, my little heart's going boing, 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 boing. And it shouldn't do that, but it is kind of an unusual night, because I would like to tell you what's on my mind and in my heart, rather than give you all sorts of prepared stuff, because I've thought about it. What do I say to people on a night like this? American Bandstand is a very special show for a rather strange reason. It arrived on television about 30 years ago, and the critics were not too kind in those days, and there were a lot of parents who were a little scared too. But you know what happened? Along the way, Bandstand was sort of like a stray puppy. It arrived on the American doorstep. It hung around. It became a member of the family, and it became part of Americana. The show has never won any big awards. The critics have never been really great to it. Nobody ever really loved this show except the people. Millions and millions of people have watched it, and they've grown up with it all along the way. You know, and somehow or other, along the way, it became the longest-running entertainment television show in the history of television. Now, that's not bad. This, by the way, is the original American Bandstand podium. I have had this in my garage waiting for this night.
Fellas, could you drop that backdrop in, please, for a second?
Now, this hasn't seen the light of day for years. This, some of you have never seen. This was about to be thrown away in Philadelphia, and one of the guys who used to be a cameraman on American Bandstand, a good friend of mine, Vince Gasparra, found it, folded up, saved it, like he put it in his garage. And I asked him, could I have it? Because to tell you the truth, we asked the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., if they would take these old relics and put them on display. And unfortunately, they said yes, because I don't want to give it away now. I really kind of like to have it back in the garage for a while. I really don't want to let them go. But Chubby Checker, you remember this podium? You were there, all right? We used to sit around the bottom, and we would do the interviews sitting around the bottom of this thing. I have a photograph here, a gem. This is you getting a gold record in splinters all in the same sitting at the very same time. A lot of famous people sat down there. And the podium started with the show in 1952, which means that when American Bandstand was born, Chubby, you were, I think, 11 years old. Yeah, yeah. Bruce Springsteen was 3. Little Stevie Wonder was really little. He was 2. And where's Debbie Boone? Debbie Boone, you wouldn't even be born yet. You were 4 years from being born when the show went on the air. Now, when you stop to think about it, there aren't many, people... stars who've been around as long as American Bandstand. I thought of 3. George Burns, Milton Berle, and Bob Hope. So, I tell you what I did. I asked them for their thoughts on American Bandstand.
American Bandstand. Great show. I've been watching Dick Clark ever since I was a little kid.
I know that for years there have been a lot of jokes around about do I have a portrait in the attic or how do I say, you know, all that stuff. America's oldest living teenager. People say to me, what is the secret, Clark? What, the secret is industrial strength Clearasil. That is the secret. You know, I've always felt that I was very lucky to be associated with Bandstand because we've been on television about 5,000 hours.
Oh, really?
We played over 60,000 records, and we've had over 9,000 performances.
Thrilling.
The average age of our dancers is 17 years and 8 months.
Okay, pal, you through? On my shows, I told 58,000 jokes. Some of them were mine. I took 6,400 pratfalls. I did 7,200 takes, some of them double. I get hit with 450 powder puffs, 620 seltzer bottles, 830 pies. Oh, and I wore 953 dresses. Your turn, Dick.
Touche, Milton. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. We've had over 600,000 kids dance on the bandstand, and we have invited some of the bandstand regulars to be with us tonight to bring us up to date and dance for us one more time. And I tell you what, too, we also have. You're going to see about 200 of your favorite stars. So, in the end, what impact has American Bandstand had on our civilization? I'm really not sure, but you know, when the world comes to a final end in a series of shattering explosions, the smoke will clear and the heavenly voice will proclaim above it all,
I like the beat. It's so easy to dance to.
Thank you very much for being here.
We just heard select clips from Dick Clark's 30th anniversary celebration of his famous television show, American Bandstand. For those of you just listening, this is Shortwave America with a special memorial tribute to the life, work, and career of Dick Clark. America's and perhaps the world's most well-known golden voice of radio and television. Next up, we'll hear Dick Clark talk about memories from 20 years of his career and his work in the field.
This is Dick Clark. You know, I got to thinking there isn't any way I'm going to be able to ramble about the past 20 years of my life in and around rock and roll and get it done in any reasonable length of time. Too much has happened. I have so many great memories I'd like to share with you. But one of the things people ask me most frequently is, who made their first appearance on television on one of the shows you've produced? And I'd like to share some of those memories with you. Keep in mind that when American Bandstand started back in Philadelphia days in 1952, all the big stars came by. The Four Aces, Eddie Fisher, Georgia Gibbs, Patti Page, Don Cornell, Johnny Ray. Rock and roll? Well, Alan Freed hadn't broken that on the world yet. I remember Bill Haley and the Saddlemen. He later decided that the Comets was a little more appropriate. On another day, many years later, I had a request from these gentlemen to see if I could dredge up an old kinescope of their first American Bandstand television appearance. It was November of 1957, as I recall, they came to Philadelphia, complete with crew cuts and smiles and eager young faces to promote a record. Matter of fact, they had a different name in those days, Tom and Jerry. That was the first network television appearance of a couple of fellows named Simon and Garfunkel. Now, when we started the Saturday Night Dick Clark Show in New York, the network people thought it'd be a great idea if an older, established star introduced a newcomer. So we got Johnny Ray to introduce a girl singer. Her father, as a matter of fact, picked her songs. He's the fellow who picked Who's Sorry Now because it was a favorite of his. Johnny Ray introduced her. Connie Francis. I once got a favor call from a famous talent manager. She said to me, could we please use this very bright, talented, shy young man? He wasn't a rock and roller, but she was sure he'd be a big star, and we booked him. And he came back many times. And he was shy and very talented. And he's still a giant. He made his first appearance on the Bandstand. Johnny Mathis. Somebody else said to me, got a kid we found on a doorstep in Philadelphia. Wait till you see him. He looks like a cross between Elvis Presley and Ricky Nelson. We put him on television and we developed a very special close-up shot to accentuate his sensuous good looks. We called it the Fabian shot. You know something? They're still taking Fabian shots of Donny Osmond and Mick Jagger and Paul McCartney and Alice Cooper. Now, this fella didn't really want to do our show, but his manager was and still is a very close personal friend of mine, and I asked him for a favor, and they came. And they made their first national television appearance on the Rock and Roll Dance Show. Jim Morrison and the Doors. Now, this young man was a Philadelphia trumpeter. His manager thought he'd sound a little more commercial if he held his nose as he recorded his first record. And he held his nose. And he knocked every teenage girl of the 50s for a loop with a thing called Dee Dee Dinah. Frankie Avalon. Now, this cocky young fellow used to come to Philadelphia regularly. He hadn't had a hit yet. He did all the record hops, but he tried hard, and he hung in there, and he finally got a hit. And another hit, and another, and another, and another. And then he came to me. We'd become pretty close personal friends by then. He said, going to switch styles, Dick. What do you think of this record? And I listened to it, and I said, ooh, boy, that isn't what your fans expect. That isn't you. That record is never going to make it. Don't do it. Wonder how many times he's sung that song since that conversation. The song was called Mack the Knife. His name was Bobby Darin, of course. Now, these four wonderful guys dragged all the way down from San Francisco to do Bandstand. They were extra busy, and so were we in those days, so we taped their guest appearance for future use. And somehow or other, these things happened 2 days before the thing was to air. Coast to coast, the tape got erased. We'd already announced their appearance. Boy, we were in a jam. So we got them together again, and we taped another segment just in time for them to make their national television debut. John Fogerty and Creedence Clearwater. Now, when these folks arrived in the studio, they scared everybody. You probably don't remember the first time they appeared on the Bandstand. The Jefferson Airplane. I remember having an argument with a talent coordinator of a show we did called Where the Action Is. She didn't like to book this act. She didn't want to book them. She said, they don't look like our kind of people. They're just not right. You shouldn't do it. And I said, how about booking them anyway? And she did. Thank goodness. The Mamas and Papas. This man came to Los Angeles with big, shiny, mirrored glasses on. He'd never appeared on television before, and I must tell you the truth, I think he was nervous. He had a mystique about him. I remember that day he came by. That was Isaac Hayes. I saw these kids first at a reception given by a friend of mine who used to sing with a singing group. The friend told me they were great. And when they appeared on the American Bandstand for the first time, the audience went crazy. The friend's name was Diana Ross, and she was the first to ask us to present the Jackson Five. Hey, sometime when we have a little more time, I'd like to tell you about some of the other first appearances by people like old Bobby Rydell, Chubby Checker, Dionne Warwick, The Fifth Dimension, Bread, Loggins and Messina, Melanie, The Guess Who, Paul Revere and the Raiders, Fats Domino, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, David Cassidy, James Brown, Neil Diamond, many, many more. You know, we presented over 8,000 individual performances on American Bandstand alone, not to mention a dozen other shows in the past 20 years. And I guess the answer to who made their first appearance on one of your shows would be answered easier by listing the folks who haven't. The fact of the matter is there have been a lot of folks who've been with us, and it's always a pleasure.
After listening to this treasured memory from the life and work of Dick Clark, we can now know that Mr. Clark did more than become a major corporate entertainment icon. He created opportunities for people who would have otherwise faded into the background of society. Dick really seemed to believe in the power of human potential. As the years of Dick Clark's life closed out, even though he had suffered a major stroke, he stayed with his most loved and most well-known production, New Year's Rockin' Eve. For as many years as we can remember, Dick Clark created the happiest countdown into each new year, bar none. We might even be safe to assume that Dick Clark played a role, even if it was minor, in helping to drop the number of drunk driving accidents, since countless people chose to stay at home and celebrate by watching New Year's Rockin' Eve. Let's listen to some moments from that memorable production.
We are here, and are we ever ready to go? You know, the great thing about New Year's Rockin' Eve is it's all kinds of music. And tonight, at the Meadowlands, at the Continental Airlines Arena over there, Kiss is appearing. They are breaking all the records in the world with their current concert tour. Gentlemen, you on stage yet?
What was really great about the end of 1996 is that we performed at the Meadowlands, and we went live on television with Dick Clark, and we were talking to him on our video screen behind us.
How's the concert going?
Say hi to everybody!
Hello there! Happy New Year!
Hey, Dick, how you doing?
It was really a special thing because, ironically, Dick Clark was the guy who put us on TV first.
There they are! Kiss is back in control! Thank you, gentlemen. We'll catch you a little bit later on.
We did a concert in the 70s, and it was our first television appearance. And I'll never forget meeting Dick Clark, because in those days, to meet Dick Clark, to me, was like Ed Sullivan. He was just a god, and to this day, he still is.
And right now, Kiss is reunited. I mentioned that the number one concert act, Peter Criss, Ace Frehley, Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley, sold out crowds all over. And in addition, watch the reaction of this Omni audience. They love them. This is Kiss on New Year's Eve.
As Kiss finished their set, the band reflected on what was their biggest year ever. From finally reuniting, to the planning and preparation of the tour, to the acclaim of Kiss fans worldwide, 1996 would be a year no one would ever forget.
Happy New Year, Paul. Happy New Year, Gene. Peter and Ace. We'll see you soon. No wonder they are the number one concert attraction. That's Kiss. Great.
Just what Dick Clark is, Dick.
Thank you, Ryan. Now, look at that picture above me. I don't care where you live. You won't find anything like it anywhere on the earth. 40 years later, I still find it amazing. Ryan? Boy, boy. What a night. Everybody came to have a good time. And are they ever having one? New York did a great job of throwing a party. And it gets bigger and more fun every year. Ryan?
It does indeed. There's more than a ton of confetti raining down on Times Square. More than 10,000.
Hamilton, good wishes were written on the pieces of confetti for people around the world. Dick?
Thank you very much, Ron. You know, we had another great new year. People are looking to the future with hope and goodwill. And not too long from now, they will call the people, sweep up everything, and Times Square will be fine by morning. But for right now, what a night to remember. Brian?
You said it, and right on time there. He wasn't a musician, but Dick Clark was a rock and roll idol, inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for spreading the gospel of pop music. As the host of American Bandstand, he introduced new songs to millions of teenagers in the 1950s without alienating their parents.
For the very first time in their lives, they've been able to look in on their children having fun doing what they like to do. They finally got a common ground of understanding so they can talk to one another for a change.
In its more than 30 years on television, American Bandstand featured the greatest pop performers. Artists like James Brown and Stevie Wonder made their debuts on the show, thanks to Clark, who ended the practice of using only white performers on television. He became an entrepreneur in the process.
Good belt.
He hosted several game shows and became a commercial pitch man. Dick Clark Productions created thousands of hours of television, particularly award shows such as the Golden Globes, the Daytime Emmy Awards, and the Academy of Country Music Awards. He appeared on many of the shows, most famously for years ringing in the New Year as the host of Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve. Clark was unable to host in 2004 after suffering a stroke a few weeks before the show, but he made a highly anticipated return in 2005. It was his first television appearance since the stroke.
We're getting closer to midnight, and everybody is starting to look to one spot.
Clark's youthful appearance earned him the nickname America's Oldest Teenager. He agreed.
The minute you grow up, the minute you mentally atrophy and freeze in time, you are old.
Clark felt that rock and roll lasted so long because it has so many forms. He himself survived by embracing each new wave, ensuring the enduring affection of generations of Americans. Manuel Gallegos, CBS News.
This has been a Shortwave America special production saluting the life and work of Dick Clark. Thank you for being here and listening. 73s and 88s were applicable.